two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Alan, you said it's been an uphill battle with your wife. We're talking about your story. And we should be make sure we say that this is your story, because you're not addicted to alcohol. It was your wife who had a run with it for 6 to 7 years, but more like majority of her life. You said she started drinking at 13 or 14. You'd had her put in jail. She did 40 days. You avoided her phone calls for 3 weeks. And one day she came to the resolution that she doesn't want to drink anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been good. She ended up, one of her friends, forked out some money to get her bailed out. And so we got her bailed out. I agreed to sign all the papers. And when Attorney General's called me and was asking me which direction I wanted to go with her, and I'm like, she needs to go to a place where she's there for at least 6 to 7 months. She has to be. She's just got to be out of society and think about her. And so we got her into another rehab, which was a state-run program, which I don't know if I should say this, but I like to speak the truth. They're the most crappiest-ran rehabs, I think, that the Valley has. You know, they're not there for the people. They're there for the money, and that's just my own belief. But
you said she went to another rehab. How many times had she been to a recovery center?
Four other times. This was her fifth time. But
So it's been a battle.
Oh, it has been a battle. Yeah.
Before you get going, I want to talk to you, Dr. Matt, real quick, because psychologically, that's got to be just a powerful, terrible thing to do, to restraining order someone you love.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, I can see it on your face as you're talking about it, even all this time later, that having to set these sorts of legal boundaries and limits to try to control her behavior. I'm surprised that the two of you stayed together, because I think for a lot of couples, that's, you set that hard boundary out of love, because you know it's the last resort, but it does become the last resort usually for the relationship. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this last time when she was thrown in jail.
And I'm going to pause for a second.
Okay.
I guess I'm fuzzy on the story, if it's okay to say, why is she going to jail? Like, you don't go to jail just for drinking, do you? I mean, all these times, 40 days? Like, why is she going to jail?
Well, as many times as we had the unified police over to our place.
So domestic violence
started getting into domestic. And Even one of the cops even told me, he's like, Al, enough's enough. We're getting tired of coming over here. Yeah. I mean, I got to know these officers' names. I mean, it's almost
that's
like they were my friends.
That's never a good thing to say.
Yeah, and that's a bad
thing.
They're out
of your
house
that much.
Because they're at the house all the time, and it's not for socializing.
Right.
You know? But it just got to the point. And, of course, when they're talking to her, she's so drunk, and she's trying to throw it on me. Mm. You know, she's trying to say, I'm the one that was beaten on her, even though there's no marks on her. And, you know, I don't know, Casey, maybe you can elaborate on this, but it's never their fault.
No,
you know, it's always somebody else's fault. And again, that's another thing that I was battling, because I really started thinking, is it my fault? Am I really doing this? I mean, I started questioning myself.
And that's part of the psychological stuff Casey was talking about, is it changes your mind, warps your perspective. When you're around chaos, you as an individual start to wonder, am I chaotic? Or, you know, another word we use is crazy. Am I feeling, you know, if I'm around a crazy situation long enough, I start to wonder, am I part of this? Am I thinking the right way? And so I think in domestic violence situations over and over again, yeah, it's hard to know where it started and when it stopped, and all that blame coming back on you can start to make you question your own sanity.
Yeah. Well, and when she got thrown in jail for the 40 days, the guilt trip hit me really hard on that one. And the reason why is because I had filed the restraining order. She was going to a rehab place in American Forks somewhere, and it didn't work out. She got the time where she was able to leave. Her mom, her health was going down. I dropped her off to see her mom. I had to go to some appointments. She ended up calling me that evening and said, hey, I messed up. I started drinking again. And she knew as soon as she got to the rehab place, she was going to be kicked out, you know, because she was drunk.
Yeah, they make you do a breathalyzer when you get back.
And I made the mistake. Now, this is not her fault. This is my own fault. But I moved to a different apartment, and she was not supposed to know where I lived. Excuse me. And so when she got out one time, you know, your heartstrings get pulled when you care about somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows how to tug on my heartstrings pretty good. And I ended up taking her over to my place. And so she ended up finding out where I lived. Well, then when she started knocking on my door again, drunk all the time, and I did not want the cops over to this new place. That's what got me out of my lease at the other one, because I'm like, hey, are you guys sick and tired of having the cops over here? You probably want me to leave, right? No, absolutely they wanted me to leave.
We'll help you pack.
Yeah, we'll help you pack.
How to break a lease by Alan.
Yeah, no kidding. So, you know, and when she started knocking on the door, getting drunk all the time, and I was trying to get her out of there, she wasn't leaving. And it felt so bad because she was calling me up and she was hungry. You know, and I'm like, well, I will make something and I will put it in some tinfoil and I'll leave it on the front porch for you to get. And I'm thinking, my gosh, that's just like feeding one of your animals. You know, you're putting food out for them to eat, and then you're up all night because she's drunk and you're going, who's going to see her? Who's going to take her? Because if they take her,
to see if it's taken, the food's been getting.
Well, the food's been taken, and then you're wondering if someone's going to nab her. Because,
is she okay? Yeah,
you know,
right.
Because if they take her and she's in that drunk state, you may never see her again. You don't have a clue where they're at. You know, so that's constantly on your mind. So, I finally called the cops. I had to dial 911. I'm like, this is what's happened. It's a restraining order. They came and got her. They found her. You know, and that's why she went to jail for the 40 days, to answer your question on that.
And you're still married during all of this.
Yeah, we're still married, and I have been working on the divorce at that time. Financially, we are not in a good shape because we went from a two-income family down to a one, and I don't make enough money to pay all the bills that we have, but I've been doing it for the last 3 years, thank goodness. Sometimes they're late, but I'm still getting stuff taken care of. But yeah, I started working on the divorce. I got with the state. They were able to help me out. They said, we'll help you out to where we will find you an attorney. Normally, it's 6 to 8 weeks for them to find an attorney who will do the case pro bono for you. So it's no cost. And it's pretty cut and dry. I'm like, you know, you have you can take whatever you want to take. I don't care. While you're in jail till you get your life, I'll make sure your stuff's taken care of. I'll keep it in storage. I will not get rid of anything. You know, I'll make sure your stuff is there for you when you're ready. And it went months and months and months with not hearing. And every once in a while, once a month, I'd get a call from the state, and they're like, hey, are you still wanting the divorce? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, it got to the point where my wife was in the rehab, and she had visiting times on Thursdays and Sundays, and it was 2 hours for each time. And I remember I got a call from the attorney's place, and they said, hey, we finally found you an attorney. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. All right. And they're like, are you still wanting to move forward? And I says, yes, I do. And they're like, all right, well, give him about 24 to 48 hours and they will get a hold of you and they'll start working on the case. And I'm like, thank you. When I hung up, I got this knot in my stomach, and I just got this weird, weird feeling like, what the heck are you doing? And as I mentioned at the first part of the show, I've been divorced a few times, and never, ever did I feel that at the other divorces. I was like, give me the papers. Let's sign it. Let's get it done. Let's get out of each other's hair so we can get on with our life. This hit me so hard deep inside that I'm like, am I seriously doing the right thing? Because everybody's given up on this girl, her family, her siblings. I mean, everybody has given up. They've thrown her under the bridge, thinking she has nobody. She has no one. And I still care for this woman. She's hurting. She's got things she's got to go through, but I know who she is as a person without the alcohol. And I remember a couple days after that, it was a Thursday, and I went to go visit her. And I said, hey, we got to talk. And she's like, oh, here it comes. And she was expecting, say, I've got divorce papers, sign them. And I said, look, I can't ask you to promise me anything because of where you're at. But I said, if you are willing to give this 100%, more than you've ever given it in all the other times, I promise you I will be right by your side. I will be there to support. I will keep my mouth shut. I won't nag on you. I won't try to be your therapist. And she's the one that pointed out that to me once. She says, you know, quit trying to be my therapist and be my husband. And I went, holy crap, she's got a hell of a point there, because I was still trying to fix her, even though I knew I couldn't. So she says, I am. I'm telling you, I'm done with this. I don't want my life to continue to go this way. I'm tired of going to jail. I'm tired of people telling me, you know, how to act and what to do. And she says, I've had enough.
So that was her rock bottom. You're listening to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction, more importantly, about recovery. In a few seconds, we're going to hear Alan explain what his wife did after she hit her rock bottom.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
So, Alan, she committed to you. She was ready to fight the good fight, as they say.
Yes. Yep, she was. She ended up having to stay at Epic, court ordered. She had to be at this rehab place for 5 to 6 months. If she ended up getting kicked out or anything happened, it was automatic 3 years in jail. Ooh, so that's a heck of an incentive.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just because of all, you know, going against the
protective order?
The protective order. Yeah, thank you, Casey. Yeah, it, you know, violated the protective order all the other times that she had been thrown in jail. So once she said that to me, and we shared some tears and held some hands and hugged, and I'm thinking, okay, I've heard this before. I've heard this before. But something inside kept telling me that this is different. For some reason, this feels different. So about another 3 weeks went by, and again, it's like I said, God works in mysterious ways. So I ended up kneeling down and praying, and I'm like, God, is this the direction am I supposed to go? I mean—
Now, are you a religious man?
I'm a religious guy. I'm kind of like, I am LDS. Our whole family is LDS. I'm not one that goes to church every Sunday, but I believe in the higher power. And I do believe in prayer. My spirituality, where I feel the closest to God, is in the summer when I go hiking and I'm on top of that mountain, you know. But, yeah.
So you got down on bended knee.
Got down on my knees and started asking God, am I doing the right thing? And the weird thing is I don't know if it was a couple hours or the next day or whatever. Some of this is a blur. But I got a phone call, and this attorney that was supposed to be helping me with the divorce had some kind of family emergency come up where he could not take my case. Hmm. And when I hung up with the attorney's office, I looked up to the sky, and I'm like, all right, God, there's my answer. He just gave me my answer. You know, this is— you're not supposed to move forward with this divorce. And I never told the attorney's office that I still wasn't interested. Mm. I just left it at that. And I kept going and visiting my wife, you know, the 2 days a week, and we started getting closer, and she was having a hard time. Like I said, these state-run programs are not an easy place. There's more drama going on there than I think there is rehabilitation, to be honest with you.
But there's a lot of drama going on at a lot of recovery centers. You get that many addicts in one room, and their emotions, their feelings, their backstories. Right. I mean, there's a lot of that. But there's a lot of camaraderie, too, where people can really get some good insight on how to get a handle on this recovery thing.
Yeah. And she had a couple good people that was there, you know, that helped her, but she was really determined. She was going to do it this time. I mean, the other places she was always coming up with excuses, you know, to leave or so-and-so isn't doing this, or they want me to do this and blah, blah, blah. You know, there was always that excuse. This time there was no excuse.
Well, I think people are oppositional to being told what to do and how to do it until they kind of break down and hit that rock bottom. And I think that's the only way. We've heard some pretty amazing stories, I guess, about people having horrible life events happen and it still didn't create a rock bottom for them. And if she, you know, finally hit that point, then it almost doesn't matter what kind of program you're in. She was ready to take advantage of it, I guess.
Yeah. So she spends 5 to 6 months in the recovery center. You go visit her twice a week. You start to get close to each other, and feelings start to come back.
Yeah, the feelings start coming back. And really what she was going through, this is when and I even told her, I says, look, I know I can't say you got this because it's a battle every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I really do believe that you are on the right path this time, because she went through a lot of stress at the rehab. Her mom's health really got bad, and her mom ended up passing away a couple months ago. And I remember telling her, I'm like, babe, if you went through all the crap you went through in jail, at the rehab, and the passing of your mother, who was one woman who never judged anybody, always accepted everything, and just very understanding woman, I said, you can make it through anything in life. I mean, seriously, you can make it through anything.
There's a lot of truth to that. So after she graduates, where do you guys go from there?
Well, we're back together. We're living together again. She just got out of rehab a little over a month ago, and she's been doing extremely well. She's a little over 7 months sober. I went with her to go get her six-month chip, and, you know, a woman who got her six-month chip, you know, three or four or five other times, but got up there and just said something very quick. This time she actually got up, and just her whole demeanor is completely different. You know, I can see that her character is so much stronger, and she's just got this confidence in herself. And she even told the story when she was holding her chip, and it got me crying because I was there for support. You know, she says, my husband told me if I went through all this other stuff and I'm still here and I'm still sober, I don't care what life throws at me, I could still be sober. And she's realizing how strong she really is, because before she thought she was the biggest piece of crap that walked the earth. She was worthless. She wasn't worth anything. Nobody cared about her. Why live? You know, might as well drink your sorrows away. But now she knows those people or those things don't determine on who she is inside as a person.
So it sounds like she's doing her aftercare. It's just as important for those who are in love with addicts to do their aftercare. What are you doing?
I'm doing everything I can to be her husband. You know, like she said, I'm not nagging on her. There's a couple times where I'll get a trigger. She explained what a trigger is to me. You know, before when she said she got a trigger, I'm thinking, oh, great, she's going to head to the liquor store. She's going to go shoplift some cooking wine, because she would drink cooking wine, you know, to get her drunk on. But I'm just there being her husband, you know. Even if I have a trigger, I talk to her. I'm like, hey, you said this. This has triggered me, you know, to where this is what's making me – I'm feeling a different way. So we've got that understanding. I'm there. I'm letting her know how much I love her, that I'm there for her. And whatever she's going through, I'm here. I mean, she called me a couple days ago and was really struggling. And normally the old me – I would have been preaching my butt off to her, going, hey, you need to do this, blah, 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 again, trying to be your therapist. First thing that come out of my mouth for the first time, I'm like, have you thought about calling your sponsor? Oh, and she goes, great. Oh, my gosh, babe, thank you.
Now, I don't want to do your job, Dr. Matt, because I can barely do mine. But I want to say, Alan, that you've got to also remember that this is your life, too. You can't live it just for her. And so I think you need to figure out you as well,
right.
You know, and don't forget about that. Am I wrong?
No, of course. There's no point in being together if you can't both be happy together. And that does mean putting a lot of energy and effort into yourself. Personal development exists across our lifetime. In every decade of our life, we should be trying to grow and learn and develop into the person we want to be. And if we feel overly responsible for our spouse, if we feel like we're the caretaker for them, sometimes that detracts from our own personal growth and development. But when two people are growing and developing in tandem and supporting each other, but still making their own strides, that's the best possible way to go. And I think you mentioned you've worked on, you know, anger management in your life, and you're obviously learning some therapeutic ways to respond to a trigger. When we're triggered, if we're not, the typical way of responding to a trigger is kind of emotional and behavioral,
yeah.
Right, where we just respond and we react. We become reactive to triggers in our life. And of course, for addicts, we know that that usually means using. But there can be other things. Anger can be a response to a trigger, or, you know, sleeping or eating or all sorts of things. But by acknowledging it, by verbally saying, I've been triggered, you create this thinking about your situation. We call it metacognition experience, which empowers a person and two people together to be able to say, oh, you're right. I didn't realize I triggered. You talk it out that way. I have a question, though. How are that? This is all just barely happening. You said she just barely got out over a month ago, and the two of you are just having these new therapeutic kind of conversations, supportive conversations. How are you doing that in this atmosphere? Everybody is supposed to stay home, stay away from, you know, we can't, like Casey was saying, AA meetings, I don't know if they're happening. I assume
no, they're not.
Some of them are doing them on Zoom. They're doing them on social platforms and
places
stuff.
Like that. But in person, that real, I mean, I think we've said it so many times, connection is the opposite of addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding it really hard to connect in the ways we used to. So just in the last couple of weeks, how are the two of you handling this?
You know, we're handling it really well, which is a surprise. We've only had one little kind of breakdown a little bit. But when she's feeling locked up, and she'll even tell me, which is really good. She's like, I'm really struggling here.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gives me that flag, you know, I know there's something that we've got to do. So we've gone for, I don't know how many damn walks. You know?
Right.
It's like, let's go for a walk. We'll go hit the Jordan Parkway, you know,
yeah.
Which is not too far from our place. And we'll go on a nice 3-mile walk, and we'll hold hands, and we'll just talk. And, you know, we'll stop and watch the geese or the ducks. Or
mm-hmm.
we just kind of have, again, that bonding time. You know, and renting a ton of movies, you know.
Have you seen Tiger King yet?
Haven't seen Tiger King yet, no. We'll have to look for that.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, well, see, we don't have Netflix.
I'll give you my password.
We're hitting all these damn red boxes everywhere.
Yeah, nobody does Redbox anymore.
No, well, we do.
Keeping them in business.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I think that time together, don't you see everybody out walking, Casey?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of, you know, being able to continue the progress the two of you have made is figuring out how to be adaptive in this environment, because it's an extra challenge.
Yeah. Well, and working together, you know, you guys brought it up is, you know, I have to work on me as well, Casey,
mm-hmm.
like you said. And I was working on myself this whole time that she was in rehab. And it's nice because before, when she would always say work came first before her. Now she's understanding where I want to go. And again, as I said a couple other times, God works in mysterious ways. This has made us both so much stronger. And it has really helped me develop more even as a person, which I've wanted to do ever since I lost my job, you know, 11 years ago. I didn't want to be the person who I was. I wanted to be somebody different who I thought I could be. And this has really helped shape me and grow me into such a different individual, to where now I'm working on wanting to become a speaker and share my life stories, just not about my wife's addiction, but just all this stuff that I've gone through in my life and how it shaped me and where it's gotten me to where I'm at. And my wife, she's the one who pointed it out to me a long time ago. She goes, you need to do something where you are doing something with people, where you're helping people. Apparently, I have this connection where people just come to me and we just become friends immediately. And I want to be able to go out there and help other people who are in the same shoes that I'm in, you know, to where, how do I get around this? Now, whether they stay together or not, that's not me. I'm not a family therapist. But to get people to open their minds and look at things differently, you know. And
well, I can tell you're helping people right now just by sharing your story. So we want to say thank you very much for stopping by today and sharing the story with you. And best of luck to you and your wife. And one thing I'm taking away from this podcast, Dr. Matt, is that love can truly conquer all. I mean, that's the thing that just keeps, it's like, wow, all they've been through and they're still together. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And I'm impressed with your willingness after all of the conflict and all of the stress and all of the visits to jail and police at your house, that you're willing to listen to that little voice or that feeling inside that you had when you knew I need to not go forward with this divorce. When you felt that, that's a hard thing to do, is to listen to that voice inside of us. And I think that was, you know, part of this new journey in your life, your own personal development as well.
Yeah, it definitely has. It's been a huge eye-opener, that's for sure.
So thank you very much for stopping by today and sharing your story on Project Recovery. And once again, we're super stoked about our new sponsor here on Project Recovery, useonlyasdirected.com. They've got their three-part solution: speak out, opt out, and throw out. Project Recovery is a KSL podcast.
Of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.